The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
Observations gleaned at successful schools. One of the privileges I have as a school representative is to visit many schools. And not to inspect them so much, but to just see what they're doing and to encourage and to learn. And there's many things that I see happening at schools, many successful things that are going on, things that are helping schools be successful and to do a good job academically as well as in other areas of school life. I'd like to just look at some of the things that I have noticed and that others that work with me have noticed in schools. I'll try not to speak about too many schools specifically. That can be dangerous. I'd like to also say right at the start that you need to be a little careful in talking to schools about schools, because what works in one community and in one setting does not necessarily mean that it works in every setting. And so there are principles and there are that we can hopefully learn, but not necessarily that we can always make the same applications with what we're doing. The statement is often made that it's the teachers that make a school successful. Now, I'm going to say something that hopefully doesn't deflate the teachers' balloons too much. Yes, teachers are a very, very important component of school influence and school success. Definitely, schools would not be doing well if we didn't have good teachers. We need them. However, I'd like to take this one step further back. What has happened that there are good teachers there? And I'd like to draw attention to school leadership, school board, school administration. And maybe you're on this school committee or administrator, and maybe you feel as if we are being put into the limelight or onto the seat of responsibility, and that's all right if you are, because that's where I want you, because of the important role, the significance that you have in the success of a school. It's the board that gives the direction to the school. It's the administration that hires the staff. And it's, although we say that teachers are very important, but it is the board that whose values and whose insights and whose interests in school or lack of it are going to show up in the kind of teachers and in the kind of program that they're going to promote in their school setting. So, successful schools, something must be happening on the leadership level to make that happen. Must be. And so I'd like to look at just some things that I've seen. I have opportunity, like I said, to visit many schools, and there's a group of schools that I visit pretty well on a yearly basis, every year. And I'd like to just share some things that I've seen that develop in their school system. They have a number of schools with a certain church conference, a certain church group, and they have requested that two of their ministering brethren are each responsible for being administrator over four schools. They have eight schools in total. These schools are somewhat of a driving distance apart. And the schools actually pay these brethren 2 days a week from their occupations. They are self-employed men, but they are paid for 2 days of week a week to visit their four schools. Now, we may not be able to do that in our settings, but what I see has been happening, these men, as they visit schools on a regular basis, there are some improving things going on. There is a regular connection between the staff and their school leadership, for one thing. The staff and the students don't say, oh, he's here again. What happened? You know, why is he showing up? No. Oh, it's his day to be here. Or, oh, he's coming in. And he's just there on a regular basis. The administrator knows what's going on because he has the temperature of the school. Very often school leadership only gets involved on a regular basis in school matters when the temperature is uncomfortable. Here the leadership senses all the temperature, the continual temperature generally. I see that the staff they feel comfortable around the administrator to ask questions, to give ideas, to give information. I see the children feel comfortable around the administrator. He's not somebody to be feared as the disciplinarian. Now, yes, he does get involved if there are difficulties. He's there. But these regular contacts that this administrator has with the school are helpful to the school program. He actually will get involved in talking to students and seeing what they're doing at their desks. I very often talk to school leaders who say, well, I don't know what to do at school. If I come there, I just stand. I have no idea. I think some of the best things that teachers can do to school leadership is the school leaders show up and, if nothing else, drag them over there and give them a pen. Set them to work. How else are you going to find out how it works? You won't learn too much by standing at the door. Yes, you might, a bit, but get involved. See what's taking place. Look in their books and ask questions, and students will like it. In fact, they may actually get some authorizations to do things the way that the teacher wouldn't want it done. But it works. And so successful schools, first of all, have a leadership that's involved with regular visits. They have leadership that's involved with relating to the staff, relating to the students, and they're in and out. It leaves a message with the staff and with the students that to the leadership, what's happening at school is important. This has value. And I know that for us who are in school leadership, it's another thing that has very often just been kindly put upon us by either patrons or the church members or whoever is in charge of the school, and they've given us this responsibility, and we want to be faithful, but it becomes another thing to do in light of all the other things that we do, and I know that we're busy with our work. Another thing that an involved school leadership does is it leaves a sense of support for the staff. School board members, school administrators, I want to tell you, school teachers feel a little awkward coming to you and telling you, informing you of how you should be doing things. or what they think you should do. That's a bit like telling the boss, you know, of how to run his business. You feel a little awkward doing that. And we often do have staff that have a lot of experience, many years in the classroom, and have insight that far exceeds that of a school leadership who's maybe on for a number of years, and then, you know, there's new people that are on. We understand that. But the more time you spend there, the more support your staff will feel. The more interest your staff will feel, and the greater security your staff will feel, especially if issues come up, maybe between, for example, staff and a parent. I've made this statement, and when I was a school teacher, I made many mistakes, but I would far rather be spanked by my school board than to be disciplined by a parent. It's not that I didn't need correction. It's not that I did it right. But somehow, when that correction is handled by the proper authorities, it leaves there's a sense of security. There's a sense of acceptance that this works a lot better. It just does. And so leadership. Successful schools have your involvement, have your insight. And as you come to school, and as you visit with the staff, and as you observe the students, and you see what's going on, you have a much better vision and perspective in going to the board meeting to discuss, you know, how are we going to do this, what are we going to do, making decisions for the school. You do. There are schools, and I think it's well-meaning, that if there's a monthly board meeting, that at least a designated board member or board members need to visit school sometime during that month. I think that's good. However, oh, Brother So-and-so is here at school today. Ah, yes, board meeting is next week. Sounds a little artificial, doesn't it? A little, you know, under obligation. I'll tell you that school students and staff don't perform on their normal basis under those kind of conditions. They don't. So, but if you show up regularly and just in and out kind of once in a while, or you might spend a couple hours a day sometimes, You get an overall temperature and insight and understanding that you don't just buy a periodic glimpse in the classroom. So take time to visit school. Take time to talk to the staff before school, after school. I mean, I know when I visit classrooms as a school representation, really what I like is if there's a school board individual there with me. I'll tell you why. If I come into a classroom and there's no school board person there, well, it's the teacher that feels somewhat obligated to, I don't know, entertain me, give me direction, and all those kind of things. And because I'm the visitor there, and the teacher feels responsible for, you know, for my presence there somewhat and helping me. And what does that do? It detains or holds back the teacher from his or her responsibility in the classroom. Well, one of my interests is to see the classroom at work. If I want to talk to the teacher, I can do that before school, after school. Those kind of things, you know. But if I want to see the classroom at work and see how you are doing and see your school room, you know, in function, I can't be taking your time. And so having a school leadership present. In fact, some of the schools I visit, their school board members or administrators that visit the classrooms with me. And they want to know what I see. Of course, I don't see everything. No, that's I'm not coming there to do that. But and they have questions. And how would you look at this? Or what's your opinion on this? So, school leaders, I want to just put a lot of emphasis and weight on this matter of administrative involvement. To me, that's part of a successful school program. I'd like to jump over to teacher preparation. Successful schools have teachers that are prepared, not just for the daily activities of the classroom, but also just prepared for their responsibilities as a teacher. School board members, teachers, at least subconsciously, we need to have the vision regularly that we are a teacher preparation institute. Because where are our future teachers? They're sitting in desks now. Maybe not our next year's teacher. And very often, leadership, we tend to look only so far. Where is next year's teacher going to be? Okay. That's very short-term vision. Yes, we need to be concerned about that. I get a lot of calls, especially between the months of March and August. Can you help me with a teacher? I'm wondering if I would be getting less of those calls if, in general, I'm asking the question, if our schools saw themselves as a teacher training institute long term. Not that all of our students will become teachers. That's not what we're trying to say. But as we go about developing and conducting a good academic program, a positive learning experience at school, that we are working with the projection, also with the vision of that our future teachers are here. And they are, this is really a teacher college. 12 years of it. That doesn't mean that the teacher already designates that so and so will be a teacher and I've got to give you special focus and attention. But if we as school leadership are going to be employing, keeping good staff, good professors, let's say, of future teachers, we can also be, we can give somewhat of an insurance that down the road there will be good teachers. Yes. There are other teaching institutions where often teachers go for further training, workshops, seminars, the summer schools, things like that. That's good. But that's not where teacher training begins. It begins in your classrooms. I personally know of some teachers, some schoolrooms that I visit, where there are some excellent teachers. I'm thinking of one teacher in particular who has taught for many years, is still teaching. And if I go into that area, and there's a fair number of our kinds of schools there, are schools that use our curriculum or that we are connected with. And I talk to current teachers and I start inquiring, where did you go to school? Who was your... Oh, Brother so-and-so was my teacher. And I start watching them teach, and I would think, my, you have a different face, but you sure teach very much like your teacher that you had. And so that teacher preparation is taking place. It better. It better. Somehow, we sometimes are rather generic, and as a school, we say, well, we are preparing students for life. And that's true. Not all our students will go out into the same occupation. We understand that. But I think we forget that. That our future teachers are with us, and we need to work on that. Prepare them. That means then that if you want to have good future teachers, you have to have good present teachers who will give them the skills and the insights and the encouragement that they need to be the future teacher that's there. That has something, there's something to be said for long-term teachers. One of the rewards of long-term teachers is to see their students hopefully following their footsteps in the classroom. Very satisfying. But then to also see them possibly doing some of the things a similar way that they were taught. I'd like to say something along with this about actual teacher training. One of the blessings that I have is to conduct training sessions, and some of them are smaller. We do them in Virginia at the office. Brother Elmer and Brother Lyndon take care of that. Brother Lyndon helps me with training sessions elsewhere. Oh, they can be. My training classes can vary from 10 people in a class to 70 in a class. And have a lot of fun doing this. And 70 stretches me a little bit, but it's good. It's good. But what I'm seeing happen in some of our settings is that I'm getting quite a few alumni. Teachers who have taken the training once already, they come back. In fact, I've had teachers who've now taken the training four times. You think, my, that must be awfully hard learners. No, it's not. I asked them, why are you back here again? You were here, you know, 2 years ago or whatever. And they say, well, I just didn't get it all that time. It is, I will admit, we throw so much stuff at you in 1 week that you'd be an absolute genius to be able to retain all of it. And also they say, well, when I came the first time, I didn't really know what to expect. Now when I come back for a training a second, a third time, I understand what's being said. The part of successful schooling then is as I go back into their classrooms and see them at work and see them improving their skills and their methods year after year. It makes a difference. I know some schools are sometimes hesitant on having their teachers go to too many seminars and workshops and so on. And I know in some of our areas there's enough of them that you wonder how many days of school will we actually have if teachers go to all these different functions. But I will tell you how I have felt as a teacher. The school benefited every time the teacher went. Yes, it cost some money. Yes, it was a, quote, day off of school for the students, not for the staff. But the school got the benefit, if nothing else, with a more inspired teacher. Okay? And hopefully a teacher with a little more insight. And yes, I have gone to a lot of seminars where I didn't gain so much new information, but I got a greater inspiration. And hopefully it picked up some tidbits along the way. Just recently somebody told me that they had gone to visit another school in session, not even to a seminar or a workshop. They had went and visited another school in session. And the meaningful difference that it made for them just to come and visit that school and to see a similar school in operation and confer with the staff and see how they do things and those teachers went home with with insight and just greater interest. So, school board, don't be too hesitant to fork out a little bit of time and money. Let these teachers go. Maybe even for summer school, pay their way. I know we're on limited budgets, but I will say this much. Our schools benefit when our educators get that kind of exposure. They do. It's not just for the teacher's personal. That spills over in the classroom. It does. It spills over onto our students. It does. So, teacher preparation is so important. Let's go over to teacher workload. Successful schools are concerned about the not just the workload of the teacher, but the workload of the student, because the workload of the student affects the workload of the teacher and vice versa. I want to give you an example of a school that I visited last year for the first time. The school is not around here, so I can talk about it a bit more freely. It's a school that's in a bit of a different setting than most of our schools are. It's a bit unique. It's a church-operated school, but it's not for their church children. In fact, most of the children from this church would be homeschooled. But this church group has an inner-city ministry in a large city. Downtown, core, hard, difficult area. And that they have different kinds of ways of communicating and reaching out to people in this downtown area. Not a very appealing area, really. But a lot of people with a lot of needs. In that downtown area, this church group found a lot of immigrants that have moved in into, this is in Canada, moved into Canada, mostly from Africa, in the last number of years. And these immigrants are people that have moral values. Many of them have Christian values of quite a sort. Most of these people belong to some form of probably more what we call high formal kind of Christian denominational groups. But these families have been concerned for their children because their children were going to the public school system, were having a difficult time integrating there because of language and culture, but also the families were seeing the erosion of their values and even their morals as their children were involved in this downtown school environment, never mind the social environment just of their neighborhood. And so this church group decided we're going to form a school for these people. It's a mission school. And this year they have about 40 students. The building is not as nice as this one, but it fits the surrounding setting. Okay. But what this mission school has had to do in reaching out to, I understand, about 8 or 9 people groups, most of them from Africa, different languages, they've had to do many things that would not be very conventional in our settings. They have to do a lot more one-on-one. They involve actually a rotating system of volunteers, of sisters from their church group, who come in several for 2 weeks at a time, I believe, to help with a lot of the one-on-one work in the school, focusing primarily on reading, spelling, math. Science and social studies are becoming very much optional interest kind of things. Important, yes, but they're focusing on the very basics that these children need. And I asked the head teacher here just the other week, when I saw him, how are things going? He says, it's our best year yet. He says, these students are making headways. They are, academically, they are getting there. There's growth there. And parents are just becoming more and more involved as they understand the school program. Support is there. It's working. It's really working. It's working well. But it has involved a lot more specialization. It has involved the organization and even the expense of more people, of more staffing. There's no way that these regular hired staff could try to deal with all these children's needs like that. It just would physically not work. But it is working in their setting because of the teacher's workload. I know. We're limited by budget, we're limited by a staff availability sometimes. But successful schools are sensitive to the workload of the teacher because that reflects the workload of the student. Let me talk about another specialized situation. I had a school board approach me within the last year or two. It says, we have in our school community a boy that is Down syndrome. He's about 6, 7 years old. And the public health department, the public social services, of course, are aware of this boy's needs. And they are putting pressure on the parents that they want him enrolled in a learning program. The family was a bit hesitant to enroll him in a public setting and wondered if he could be part of a Christian school setting. And this was where this board was asking me, do you think that'll work? We don't have a special class. We don't have special trained teachers. What can we do? Can we do something? And I told them this. God did not just give that little boy to his parents. Yes, he did. He gave him to you as a group to minister to. And I would suggest, do what you can. One of the concerns that the parents had is that in the public setting, there would be a whole different set of values that this boy would encounter than what they really wanted him to have. This little boy loves to sing and pray. Well, that's not part of the setting where they would expect him to be receive his education. And so, this little boy is now in first grade. He can't keep up with other first graders, but he's learning, and he gets special tutor help. He's learning how to socialize appropriately. And he's there. I just recently asked the parents, how's it going? They said, it's going. It's going. So successful schools are willing to to stretch sacrifice. And I believe in their, what they're planning to do. They do have an adult person who's planning to take some training, if nothing else, by reading and, you know, just some personal kind of courses that they'll be able to take to somehow be able to give direction on how to help a boy with this kind of learning needs. I'm not going to spend too much attention on teacher recognition, not because that's not important, but that seems to be an area our schools do quite well. I mean, you look at most of us and there's all these snacks and treats and gifts and those kind of things. They're appreciated, very much so. But you keep your staff and well cared for. And you keep your staff happy. Does something for a school. But I also know school board members. I will say this: if you keep a staff that's under tension because of problems, or that their salaries are really in such a level that they can hardly make it. I know not all teachers are the best financial managers, but let's say if those are kept a little bit too close to the line, and that your teachers find themselves under a tension situation, knowing how they're going to pay the bills. If the teacher has to worry how he's going to pay his bills, he's going to have a difficulty being successful in the classroom. We know how we are with our employments when these kind of pressures mount on us, right? It saps us of a lot of our energy. It does the same for a teacher. And that affects the school as well. Let's go over to school environment. And I want to take some time, especially for the academic environment part. Successful schools look at orderliness, and you know that's pretty well a given. There's very few schools that I come to that are not orderly. It's something about our people in general. And it makes a difference. We know that. I'd like to just draw attention to a few items. The cleanliness and the roominess, you know, that thing. I have been in some classrooms that were very tight and crowded. And given the school maybe just did not have the funds for bigger, more roomier facilities. But if things are too dark, crowded. I've been in some schools where the walls were painted dark and there was not many windows. Well, that has a, and that's a negative drain. But if classrooms are roomy and cheerful, and pleasant, appealing, this is something for success for the students. I want to say something about inside shoes and outside shoes. You think, oh, what's now, you know, what's Christian Life promoting now? I'm not going to advocate that you do this. Maybe it's more of a Canadian thing than a U.S. thing, but I'm told that in Canada people are more used to taking off their shoes when they enter in than what happens in the U.S. That could well be. But I have seen a number of schools where all students have shoes that they use inside, and shoes that they use outside. And you come into their hallways and there's whole racks of shoes. In fact, Brother Harold Dean said to me, he wants to employ that in his school now. And he told me why. He says, my students come in and they sit, they've been playing out, maybe it's a little muddy and stuff like that, and then they have these big clumps of whatever on the floor, and he says, and that just leaves somewhat of an atmosphere in the classroom. And it sure helps you keep your school cleaner. And but I've seen this at a number of schools, and students, It tells the student something. This is an important place for learning. You know, things are done. You just don't walk in and track in all over the place. You know, this place is to be kept nice, appropriate. It leaves a values message. It does. With everybody there. Even the matter of friendliness. We appreciate if our children are somewhat reserved and respectful. We like that. I'll just want to throw something at you, and I don't expect this of your school if I come visit, but I was actually taken aback a little bit at a school and this happens at a few schools, but at the first time this happened to me, school of 150 students. I had devotions with the children in a big assembly room and had a good time with them, enjoyed this. And at the end, when they were dismissed, I thought they'd all just rush out and go and back to their classes. And then I saw something happen. They all lined up from the youngest grade to the oldest, and they all filed by and they shook my hand. Now, by the time 149 came around, it was rather artificial and, you know, just rather mechanical for me. But you have to remember, for each of those students, it was a personal contact, okay? And it took me all day to visit their school. I mean, there was 10 classrooms or whatever it was. And as I come to the classroom, there was that personal touch, okay? I had connected already as a visitor with them. I only recall of one student ever that first grader, and I was told afterwards that she regularly did this, so this wasn't new to me, that would cry when I show up and I came close to her desk and ask how she was doing or what her name was or what, you know, things like that. I was a little worried when that happened that I didn't know what I had done that was so terrible. But successful schools, there's that friendly, there's that, how should I say, that restful attitude in the classroom, a restful spirit. Not a spirit of tension or uptightness, that restful spirit between staff and students, visitors, parents, you know, there's a spirit of acceptance. I'd like to talk about academic environment for a little bit yet. There's much that we could say about successful academic environment. I'm going to harp on something a little bit, and that is successful schools place students successfully. I want to tell you about an incident in our own school. We have a young boy there, fifth grade. He's been struggling somewhat with his learning ever since first grade. It's not that he was a poor learner. It's not that he had bad attitudes. He's actually a cheerful young fella. He is very pleasant, but learning is not his strength. Now you watch him play outside on the ball field or stuff like that. You can really sense, you know, that's where he excels. And we know God has just not made all our children the same, with the same interests and abilities. And the last couple of years, I've done some substitute teaching there. And I've sensed that his whole learning experience has not been improving. Well, this year his teachers came and said, "We need to do something. This is not working. Are we always just going to drag this boy around along like this?" And finally, I had hinted at this before, and I says, "Well," says, "I'm going to give you a strong hint. I feel it's time to give the boy a diagnostic test. We should have done a while already." I'm not promoting that we have to set him back, but to find out what he knows or what he doesn't know. Maybe we can make up a fair bit with just some remedial kind of things. He says, it's not going to work for us to just keep dragging around like this. It becomes a demoralizing thing for the boy academically. It's a wearying thing for his parents. It becomes difficult for the teachers and even the fellow students who have to work along this, beside this thing. The parents, thankfully, supported it. Of course, that's a key. Now, we're going to have to do some pretty heavy setback kind of things with it. The test showed it. The test actually confirmed things that I thought were the way they were. And in fact, when I get home now this week, I have to sit down and somehow chart a course with the staff and with the parents on what we think is best and what to do. Successful schools handle the matter of placement. It's not just a matter of failing them, setting them back. I talked to a grandfather recently. He's an administrator of a school. He says, how's your grandson doing? He says, well, they kept him back this last year. He's a much happier boy. He's doing a lot better. And of course, I feel if we need to do it, it's much better if we can do it in a younger grade setting than if we wait till things are a lot further advanced. It becomes much more painful. We could talk about special programs. We've already looked at a bit of that before. Successful schools. I'll just focus a little bit on things like library resources and lab resources. I know we have limited budgets, but I would suggest for library resources, allocate a certain amount every year for library and resource buildup. If your students have a chance to be reading new books, interesting books, every year, the more you can get your students to read, it's going to show up in their the success in their schoolwork. It just will. About labs, I know we can't spend a lot of money very often on lab equipment. And it may not be that important whether you have $10 test tubes or $5 test tubes or $3 test tubes. But I would like to say there's two items in your lab. Please don't just buy the cheapest. Now, I'm not just talking dollar value. I'm talking of quality. If you're going to go out and get a microscope or a beam balance, look for something that's worthwhile. It's very frustrating to a teacher and to students if they set up this nice experiment and because we have inadequate beam balance or a poor microscope and the thing just doesn't turn out well. And it leaves a souring kind of a taste for the whole matter of experiments and somewhat of a wasted time situation. That's how students feel about it. So I would encourage, take time. Successful schools. I know of a school that last year put on a science fair. I saw some of the, actually what the school did is the students didn't only make motors from scratch. They made generators to run the motors. And then they tried to have a water power system to run a generator to run the motor. They almost got it. But those students learned skills they would have never picked up from a textbook. I want to leave with one thing. Successful schools, and I already talked about this a bit before, successful schools are concerned about vision. Just recently, I've been involved with, for many years, I've been involved with a certain school group that has an important value thing to them is retaining German language. They use it in their church services and their leaders and many of their parents have been lamenting, our children are not picking it up. The school was not doing a very good job about it because the teachers didn't know it very well themselves. They didn't really have the curriculum resources. They weren't using the curriculum resources well. The teachers were poor at the language. And the teacher thought someone, well, it's just an extra and we really don't have time for a lot of, you know, it became a burden. These schools were talking to me and they said, what shall we do? And I told them, you're going to have to bite the bullet. If this is important to you, stop wishing. Do something. It's going to cost you money. It's going to cost you effort. It's going to cost you time. You're going to have, if this is what you want, you're going to have to put shoe leather to it. And they're starting to do it. And it'll be a long, long project. But successful schools have a vision not only of just wanting that, desiring it, but taking concrete steps, whether it's a certain language, whether it's a certain program of teaching, whether it's whatever. And I would say successful schools have a long-term planning vision. Don't just look at what we want now and we don't have, what we need now. Where do we want to be? That's where successful schools focus on.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.